World News Today, brought to you by Continental Radio and Television Corporation, makers of Admiral Radio, America's smart set. By shortwave broadcast, direct from important overseas stations, as well as leading news centers of our own country, CBS correspondents are waiting to bring you a complete report from the world's political and battlefront. But first, here's Doug Edwards.
British and Canadian troops have widened their bridgehead on the toe of the Italian mainland to a strip of land at least 40 miles wide. And great air fleets continue the systematic destruction of enemy communications. There's an unconfirmed report that the Italian fleet has abandoned the big naval base at Taranto. In Russia, the Ukrainian steel center of Stalino seems to be next on the Red Army's schedule of reconquest. And in the Pacific, American planes have all but wiped out the Jap base at Salamaua and Lai, New Guinea. Now, news direct from the Mediterranean, Admiral Radio takes you to CBS Algiers. John Daly reporting.
The British and Canadian troops of the 8th Army in the last 24 hours have tripled the length of the front they hold on the shore of Italy. Every town and every inch of coastal highway from Bagnara above the Straits of Messina to Melito, more than 30 miles to the south, is firmly in our hands. Today's official communique says the advance continues along the whole front. Bagnara fell to British commandos on Friday night less than 24 hours after 0 hour. The commandos coming in from the sea met with little opposition and rapidly formed a junction with the forces who had landed at San Giovanni to the south. Meanwhile, the troops who landed originally at Reggio drove down the coast road to occupy Melito under the tow with no opposition worthy of the name. In spite of increased demolition, which is causing some delay, Axis opposition remains comparatively weak. Some 2,000 prisoners have been taken, mainly Italians, who didn't fight. It is possible that the Axis forces may have pulled out of the tow. They are like a man fighting a lion out on the end of a tree limb who has to look back continuously to make sure no one is saving or sawing the limb behind him. Somewhere in the foot of Italy, it's expected that the Axis will make a stand. That somewhere will probably be a point where the constant threat of an Allied flanking movement by sea is partially neutralized by enough land space to leave a fighting chance for a quick withdrawal. In the air, there was a slight increase in Axis opposition yesterday. 20 enemy fighters carried out an ineffective attack against our supply lines in the Straits of Messina. 8 of them were shot down. Meanwhile, our tactical air force roamed all over the Italian shore looking for targets and not finding very many. The strategic air force, in spite of bad weather, successfully attacked airfields, railway and road concentrations, and radio installations near Naples. One contributing factor to the lack of Axis opposition is the chaotic condition of their communications. Reconnaissance photographs taken within the last 24 hours show the Axis rail communications very seriously damaged from Bolzano in the north, only 30 miles from the Austrian border, all the way down to the tip of the Italian toll. Rail lines radiating out of Bolzano, Trento, Pisa, Cancello, Pescara, Benevento, and Aversa, all key junction points are either cut or blocked by smashed rolling stock, tremendous craters, blasted tracks, and blown bridges. Damage to highways has also been severe. Important bridges have been blasted to rubble. This is still fundamentally a war of supply, and we have hit the Axis where it hurts most in destroying his supply line. Now back to CBS in New York.
More news in just a moment, but first here's Warren Sweeney with a word from Admiral Radio.
Here is an example of cooperation between air and surface forces that resulted in the capture of an enemy submarine. Cooperation made possible through the use of radio. An Allied patrol bomber operating near the coast of England surprised a Nazi U-boat cruising on the surface. The sub crash-dived, but was blown back above water by a series of well-placed bombs. Crippled and unable to submerge, it lay helpless while the plane, its bomb racks empty, grimly circled and kept vigilant guns trained on the conning tower. Without radio, this encounter might have ended in a stalemate, but a message from the plane brought a surface vessel to take over the U-boat to finish the work begun by a land-based bomber. Here is another dramatic instance of the use our fighting men are making of the equipment now pouring from Admiral assembly lines. These uses are many and varied, but wherever Admiral-built instruments are found, whether in the sub-zero cold of the stratosphere or the burning heat of the African desert, our men can be sure they have in their hands electronic weapons of proven dependability. And after the war, when peace has been won, The knowledge gained in building these wartime implements will be yours in the peacetime Admiral, America's smart set. Now, here once again for Admiral Radio is Doug Edwards.
For a direct report on the latest news in Great Britain, Admiral Radio takes you now to CBS London. Larry Lester reporting.
London is relaxed and relieved over the knowledge that the long-awaited invasion of Italy has turned out an RAF plan to be a piece of cake. The fighting is expected to get tougher as soon as the British troops come up against the German defense line. No observers here are willing to venture a guess as to where the Germans will make a stand. But it's known that a number of German divisions are in the south of Italy. In London, it looks as though the Italians would be ready to come to terms at any time. But the Badoglio government is not the real master of the situation in Italy. Those 18 odd divisions of the German army and their supporting Luftwaffe are at the moment the strongest force on the Italian mainland. Informed quarters here believe that we will have to land at least a similar number of divisions in Italy before the Badoglio government could feel free to make a decision in our favor. There are increasingly strong rumors that the northernmost country of Fortress Europe is ready to call it quits. But the British attitude is that if Finland wants to talk peace, they'll have to approach Moscow direct. The Finnish indecision lies in the fact that Germany is feeding them. There is a possibility that if Sweden were willing to reduce the rations of the Swedes by 10%, Finland could be fed and find it possible to retire from the war. London is undoubtedly rather surprised by the news that Marshal Stalin has made a pact with the leaders of the Orthodox Church in Russia, that he has agreed to a meeting of Russian bishops to elect a patriarch of all Russia and to establish a holy synod. Observers here surmise that this Soviet move has a direct bearing on the new situation in the Balkans. The main rift between highly religious Bulgaria and Soviet Russia has always been over the Bolshevik curb on the Orthodox Church. The fact that the Red Army is now re-entering the Ukraine, where the Germans re-established the Orthodox Church during their two-year occupation, is also reflected in the Kremlin's decision. There are people here who wonder if the timing of Stalin's friendly gestures toward religion had any connection with the Pope's recent peace appeal. I return you now to CBS in New York.
Columbia's traveling reporter Don Pryor is in New Orleans ready to interview Andrew J. Higgins, the man credited with the impossible in building PT boats, landing barges, and other craft for our armed forces. Mr. Higgins has strong views on the utilization of our vast war facilities when the fighting is over. For this interview, Admiral Radio takes you to New Orleans, Don Pryor reporting.
All over America, I have asked all kinds of men what they were planning for the peace, what they thought the chances were to utilize America's vast war facilities when the war is over. I've had all kinds of answers. They range from blank despair to a kind of hypnotic faith that all will be well. In between, there's a strong current of determined purpose that says, by golly, the job's got to be done regardless. One of the greatest spokesmen for that school is Andrew Jackson Higgins of New Orleans. He's the designer and builder of PT boats, landing barges, cargo ships, and other craft, and soon he will be one of the nation's largest builders of cargo airplanes. Mr. Higgins, what's your answer?
There is no room in the world today for the negatives, those who say it can't be done. This war will be won by the positive men, liberals, and so will the peace. We must look forward to the day when our boys will be returning. They will not be satisfied to rake leaves or sell apples on street corners, to be shunted or shoved around. They will demand jobs and decent incomes. It's up to the government and industry alike to plan, to engineer, to see to it that this country will be a better place in which to live than it was before. We have learned that when there is a need, the money to meet that need can be found. There's been too much prattling about balanced budgets, alarm for the national debt, such negative bugaboos used to maintain the status quo. In time of war, we forget them and go ahead and perform so-called miracles. Should we fear to attempt tasks for peace as great as or even greater than our accomplishments for war? Why should not the vast plants and other enterprises created to produce expendables be even increased for greater employment to create usable things to advance our civilization to ensure the betterment of our way of life. Why should we hesitate to undertake vast enterprises, such as the creation of superhighways, super railroads, the establishment of great craft training schools, the elimination of the slums to provide decent habitations to all our people? America can do all this.
Well, for the present, Mr. Higgins, there's an immediate problem, manpower.
Yes, but I think a lot of the manpower that's been recruited away from this section will be coming back soon. Ducks fly south in the fall, you know. Aside from that, I believe people leaving non-essential jobs for war work should be given guarantees their old jobs will be secure when the war is over. The same assurance the law gives to soldiers and sailors. Moreover, I believe the government should clarify the situation now that war plants with proven capacity for economical and quality production will be utilized for peace as well as for war. If people had that assurance, they would, or should, more cheerfully give up their present job for a job in a war plant.
Well, speaking of post-war use of war plants, how about your own organization? I understand you're interested in boats, helicopters, plywood products, and lots of other things.
I'm interested in everything that will contribute to better living. Better homes, better transportation, lower costs in production, and proper and insured income for the workers. There must be a greater distribution of wealth. There must be universal opportunity for all to acquire education and works training. This can't be done unless we have a national policy and a national plan that calls for these things. It will be useless for any individual to say that he's going to do any one thing or another otherwise.
That was Andrew Jackson Higgins. This is Don Pryor in New Orleans. I return you to CBS in New York and Doug Edwards.
One of the few places in Europe where both Allied and Axis diplomats and travelers come and go freely is the Spanish capital of Madrid. For a report direct from there, Admiral Radio takes you to Madrid. Glenn Stadler reporting.
The big local news in Spain today comes from Burgos, where General Franco presided at the celebration of the founding of the Kingdom of Castile 1,000 years ago. During the remainder of this week, the local headlines will concern the grand finale of the summer season in San Sebastian, where Foreign Minister Jordana, Ambassador Hayes, and the diplomatic corps have been residing. These events are chiefly social, but also have much political significance. Before going north, the Army Superior Council met twice. Such meetings are held only to consider important matters. Aside from politics, all Spain is speculating on whether or not a big-time bullfighter, Domingo Ortega, will appear in Madrid next week. And anything can happen, either inside or outside the ring. Yesterday, bullfight fans carried to the cemetery the body of one of their fallen heroes. Spaniards, of course, are vitally interested in Italy, but consider its collapse a foregone conclusion. One observer commented that it merely was a question of whether Italy would be devoured bit by bit, like eating an artichoke or swallowed in one mouthful. They would not be surprised if a definite offer of peace came from the Council of Ministers in Rome tomorrow. Some think the Allies will drive across Italy, span the Adriatic, and join General Mikhailovich in Yugoslavia and the thousands of patriots in Albania and Greece. Because of this, much importance is attached to the Hungarian Foreign Minister's pessimistic statement yesterday. He said that Hungary only entered the war to defend herself, yet she grabbed part of Yugoslavia, and her troops are fighting and retreating in Russia. It's quite possible that the Hungarians, with whom the war was never popular, are exploring ways and means of extricating themselves from Nazi domination. From France comes the story that Maurice Chevalier has started a new mode in men's clothing, the turned-up pants leg. It has had widespread success, for it has become the symbol of those who don't want to be sent to work in Germany. This is Glenn Stadler in Madrid, returning you to Doug Edwards in New York.
One of the most important phases of America's war effort is the safe and speedy transportation of American soldiers wherever they are needed, whenever they are needed. To give you a picture of how that gigantic job is being handled on America's railroads, Admiral Radio takes you to the Pullman Company's headquarters in Chicago, Bill Slocum, Jr. reporting.
I'm sitting now in a simple office located in the Pullman Company's Chicago headquarters. Across from me sits an affable-looking gent who claims he's 71 years old. He's got a cigar perched jauntily in the corner of his mouth, and without ever losing a drop of ashes, he sees to it that the tremendous and important demands of the Army Transportation Corps and the Navy are met promptly. His name is Bert Dewey, and of course they call him Admiral. Admiral, tell us how your job works.
That phone rings over there, and the Army or Navy tell me to get so many Pullman cars at such and such a place at a certain time. I do it.
You must know where every Pullman in the country is located at all times.
I do, including the ones in Mexico and Canada.
How long have you been at this sort of work, Admiral?
This is my third war, son. I sent the boys off to two and brought them back after they'd won. And I don't expect to ruin my record with this war.
Is this a tough one on transportation?
The last one was a shuttle service compared to this one. I knew this was going to be a corker the day of Pearl Harbor. The Navy wanted 178 fully equipped sleeping cars at the Great Lakes Naval Training Station within 16 hours.
Did they get them?
Of course they got them.
If tonight is a typical night, how many soldiers, sailors, Marines, and Coast Guardsmen will you move?
30,000, maybe more, maybe less, but that's typical. You see, they really train the boys for this war. We figure each man makes 7 or 8 trips before he leaves the country. The boys get special training in the mountains, the desert, and in schools. In the last war, they gave them a gun and sent them across.
Supposing that phone rang right now with orders to move 500 officers and 3,500 men to Camp Forrest in Tennessee, from Camp Forrest in Tennessee to Camp Hahn in California. What would you do?
First, I'd check to see what equipment we had going into the Tennessee Territory and what was there. I'd contact our representatives in that area and order the number of cars required started to Camp Forrest, fully equipped and staffed.
You get many rush orders in your department?
Every day. We are apt to have our schedule all set when a must order comes in. That means we must stop everything we are doing and take care of the new order. Perhaps we learn that a train load of wounded men are on the East Coast waiting to be moved. Injured are always given the right of way over all others, so we change our plans immediately and move them.
I don't quite understand why so many Pullman cars are being used. Most of the troop movements I've seen have been in coaches.
They were going on short trips. Actually, 66% of all troops travel in sleeping cars. The Army and Navy insist upon Pullman cars for long hauls.
How many Pullmans does that mean daily?
Around 3,000 cars, and that requires a trained staff from coast to coast.
And one more thing, Admiral. It has nothing to do with the job, but could I look at the man who thinks up names for Pullman cars?
Sorry, Mr. Slocum. He works in a dark room and nobody can bother him. Seriously, though, there is a reason for every name. A mountain car is an observation car with 10 sections. A lake car has 10 sections, one drawing room, 2 compartments, and so on.
Thanks, Bert Dewey, Superintendent of Car Service for the Pullman Company. Thanks for telling us how Pullman cars are named, and thanks for your magnificent contributions to winning this, our third war. I return you now to CBS in New York and Doug Edwards.
Here in our New York studios to discuss the continuing Russian summer offensive is Columbia's military analyst, Major George Fielding Elliott.
The Germans are accelerating the pace of their withdrawal from the Donetsk Basin, where the Russians have now occupied about half of the important junctions in the rail network centering about the German stronghold of Stalino. The Russians are approaching Stalino from 3 directions, north, northeast, and east. And a further threat to the city is the possibility of its being outflanked from the south by a Russian column which is making some progress along the shore of the Sea of Azov. This German withdrawal is the result of the Russian successes farther north, whose extension toward the Dnieper would inevitably mean the capture or destruction of such troops as might still be in the Donetsk when the Russians reach the Dnieper. The real strategic key to the whole southern front is the area between Kharkov and Poltava, where the Russians are keeping up strong pressure on the German defense lines, while also endeavoring to outflank Poltava by a wide sweep to the westward, which has almost reached the River Desna. What is really impressive is the way in which the Russians keep on finding reserves for the extension of their operations in this fashion, and also to keep up the steady pressure on the Germans farther north in the Bryansk and Smolensk areas, which prevents the Germans from withdrawing troops from north to south to meet the increasingly critical situation. Frontline dispatches suggest that previous reports of the deteriorating quality of the German Army's personnel are well-founded. Men of all ages and of various racial origins are to be found in the ranks of the Wehrmacht, which only a year or so ago was almost altogether composed of young men of German birth. This is the German situation as the German armies in South Russia stand faced with the possibility of a disaster before which even that of Stalingrad would seem small. The plain fact is, as Bill Downs, the CBS correspondent in Russia, points out, the Germans have been heavily defeated in Russia this summer, and they are going to have a tough time to get away with no more than the loss of territory. A Russian breakthrough anywhere between Poltava and Izium would mean disaster.
Now, Admiral Radio takes you to CBS Washington. Robert Lewis reporting.
The continued absence of news concerning the whereabouts of American ground forces in the current operations against Italy seems to be causing little concern here in Washington. Rather, plans are going ahead for the eventual occupation of that country, suggesting that there's more in the immediate future than meets the eye. It's been reported that a three-power committee composed of British, American, and Russian representatives has been set up to minister the entire Mediterranean area. At the same time, the State Department has appointed C.B. Baldwin, currently the chief of the Foreign Security Administration, as the director of American relief and other economic operations in Italy when that country is liberated. In addition, there's another report that the three great allied powers have agreed to a conference among their foreign ministers or their representatives, which presumably would deal with political aspects of the European war. Rubber Director Jeffers' resignation, announced last night by the White House, is not taken in the same vein as other recent resignations here in Washington. Jeffers' work, as he pointed out in his letter to the President, is practically finished, and while he's been party to several intra-administration fights, there's no feeling that he resigned in a huff. President Roosevelt and other high-ranking administration leaders, in observance of the Labor Day holiday, have called for increased production from workers, management, and the nation's farmers. And while praising past performances, they said that increased output now would save more lives and suffering and bring the day of final victory even closer. Meanwhile, a government move is underway to ease the critical manpower shortages in both the railroad and aircraft industries. West Coast aircraft factories are facing a program which calls for the allocation of manpower, and the railroads have been asked to use war prisoners and suspend some of their peacetime practices to ease their manpower shortages. I return you now to CBS New York and Doug Edwards.
Once again, here is Warren Sweeney with a message from our sponsor.
Last week on this Admiral program, you had a striking illustration of one of the roles radio is playing in this war. From the flight deck of the aircraft carrier Wolverine on Lake Michigan, you saw at first hand what it means to be a naval pilot, to land a plane on the pitching deck of a ship. You heard the bump of the wheels as they struck the flight deck, the roar of the engines as the plane took off again, the terse commands of the flight officer, and the immediate response of the plane high overhead. Communication as simple and direct as if the two men were standing side by side. This authentic drama, brought to you by Admiral Radio, is being reenacted in deadly earnest in battle actions all over the world. And wherever our men are fighting, from the storm-swept Aleutians to the jungles of the Solomons, there also will you find Admiral-built equipment helping to bring closer the day of victory. When that day comes, Admiral, in peacetime the world's largest manufacturer of radio phonograph combinations with automatic record changers, will again bring you America's Smart Set.
Attention, men and women of Chicago. Your country needs you. Help build vital communication equipment for our frontline fighters at the Great Admiral plants in Chicago. The work is easy and interesting. No experience is necessary, and you'll be paid while learning. The factories are modern, with the latest type machinery as well as company cafeterias for your convenience. Simply go to the employment office of the Admiral plant at 4150 North Knox Avenue by taking a Montrose streetcar to 4600 West. Or take the Armitage Avenue car to the Admiral plant at 3815 Armitage. Get into radio now, the modern business with a great future. Be sure to listen again next Sunday when Continental Radio and Television Corporation brings you World News Today, direct from the leading news centers of the world. This is the Columbia Broadcasting System.